Thank you very much, Dr. Truman. Good afternoon. It is truly an honor for me to speak for Minister Chu as a replacement here, especially with such a distinguished panelist in the room. I think the story the Minister Chu wanted to share with you is that, you know, how Taiwan, the small countries, can achieve the goal of a universal coverage in a way it's not a, a difficult thing, but it just needs some kind of a determination to do it. And I'm not such an expert on this, but I think one of the reasons Minister Chu want me to be here to talk about this is because you know that I, when 10 years ago, I was the man who really kind of coined the term second generation national health insurance in Taiwan when I was the Director General of Health Planning. And time flies, and you know, we have that second generation health insurance scheme took place and just this year, January 1st. So I'm going to tell you about this story a little bit, but first a little bit of background of Taiwan. Taiwan, as many of you know, is a small country with a population of 23 million. It's aging fastly, and the GDP, we are such a sort of a middle, high-income countries with a national health expenditures about 6.6% to the GDP, which is certainly low in a way, but it's not all public expenditure. Actually, half of that is really from out of pocket, and half of that is through the public systems. In 1995, Taiwan government implemented this called National Health Insurance that covered 99% of the populations. But before that, actually, we have that labor's social health insurance in 1950, and then the government employee insurance, and then the farmer insurance. And like I said, this year, January 1st, we have this second generation national health insurance. And also as a campaign, President campaign promised, we should have the long-term care insurance by the year of 2016. Now, from the start, in retrospect, it looks a simple forward, but actually in reality it's kind of a complicated and it's a mess actually when we dealing with all this. Take one example. In 1990s, when the Congress passed the law for the National Health Insurance, actually they took out the individual mandate out of the law in the last minute. That is the thing, you know, the core elements of any social insurance. And it is not recommended by the executive branch. It is not approved by the Congress. It just simply just take out. And at that time, actually, some of the president advised that why not we kind of go along with it and amend the law, you know, several years later when see what happens. But the president then insists, he knows that it's not going to work if we don't have that individual mandate. And so he insists, he go back, regroup, and mobilize his political machines and get the bill back to the Congress in 3 months and pass it. So it's like the Congress make a U-turn, literally legal U-turns, in just 3 months. And that happens in Taiwan, and actually there's a lot of this kind of things happen. And so that's why, you know, some of the things that the minister want to come express, sometimes in the real world, it's really unique, the leadership, and stick with it, and and with all the determinations. And that is one of the story I can share with. There's a lot more. Now, as you know, that Taiwan, the single-payer system, single-tier system, the one we have, has some key characteristics. Compulsory, you know, as we just mentioned, single-payer run by the government, and finance primarily from the employer-employee and the government. Now, the benefit is pretty much comprehensive, and but a little bit co-payment, relatively low than in other countries, is required, of course. And provider, two-thirds of a provider is actually private, and they compete for patients. And right now, it's actually 94% of the providers contract with NIH. So we still have a private market, but relatively the private market is really small. Now, in terms of payment, we are going to the payment reform as well right now, but basically, fee for service is the old system, but we have also have the DRG, the bundle payments, the ACO, like the one here in the U.S. experimenting, and we know that there's more to come because we know the old way of paying doctor is not going to work in the futures, and as a social insurance, certainly you need to take care the under advantages, the disadvantages. So for the poor, for the elderly age 65 years old, for the patients with a catastrophic disease like cancer or other disease, they are all waived for copayment and premium. So it's actually kind of free for them. Now, as a result, the medical utilization is relatively high over the years, and compared to other countries, for example, the OPD visit is 15 per year per person. Now, it's probably the second highest, only second to Japan. People are arguing maybe that is kind of a waste. But we don't have an IOM study like here in this country that's saying, you know, one-third of the medical is West. We don't have that, but I think many people think there's room for improve. But on the other hand, many people will argue that is precisely the system want to do. And to make to break down the financial barrier, to make it convenient for people so they can always go to the doctors for every kinds of the treatment, including the preventive services. Now, and also the hospitalization rate is also high. Now, certainly one core value of the National Health Insurance or any social program is to share risk and cross-subsidizing. And so we have achieved that as shown in the Taiwan experience and this slide, as you can see, that the cancer patients actually spend five times as in the medical expense as compared to the average. Now, they are not the highest super users. Actually, the group with hemophilia spent 127 times of the medical expense compared to the average. Now, in terms of the qualities, many studies have shown that the quality of the Taiwan medical care is readily comparable to the developed countries like this one. And this is just to show you some of the results in terms of the survival rate in terms of the cancer patients or the kidney, liver, or heart transplant patients. Now, all these numbers look up comparable, probably with only one exception in the heart transplant. There's a 10% difference between the Taiwan and the United States. And so there's still a room for improvement. The public satisfaction rate, I mean, the national health insurance in Taiwan is probably one of the few public policy enjoy such a high satisfaction and become a one of the few popular public policy in Taiwan. Currently, it enjoyed 80-some percent of the approval ratings. But this is not the case in the very beginning. We don't have a web problem, but actually we have all sort of glitches or debacle and any problem in the very beginning of the system. So you can see actually when the National Health Insurance started in 1995, the approval rating and satisfaction rating is only 30-something. And actually people is screaming, but you know, at that time the leadership is quite determined to do it. And so, you know, over time you can fix it. And also because people kind of anxious about any change. And especially for those people who have already have the insurance, they don't want to change, okay? So that's why explain the low satisfaction. But over time, we can get it over. And also, as you can see, every time you try to raise the premium or copayment, you take a hit. And so, and every time, actually it happened twice. You know, it happened and the health minister stepped down. And maybe that's the price you have to pay in a democratic countries like this. But you know, that's the story we have. Yeah. But we are very confident over time this kind of social program really works. Now, our national health insurance program has kind of attracted media attentions over time. New York Times, PBS, CNN, recently Time, even National Geographic, and all kind of give a very high remark on the Taiwan experience. But you cannot see conservative media like Fox, right? I don't think they will have any interest in reporting Taiwan story. If they do, they will focus on the dark side or the disadvantaged side of the system. For instance, you know, it's a very low satisfaction rate from the healthcare workers. They're probably a little bit slow pickup of new technology and, you know, creating dependency for the poor, that sort of criticism. Yes, it happened in Taiwan, I have to admit, but on the balance, I think it's still worth to do it. And so seriously, I mean, the first generation does have some disadvantages. And so we have to move on and, you know, do all kinds of modification. And that's why we have this second generation. So in sum, the challenge for the first generation national health insurance is, for instance, the lack of link between the spending and the revenues. Also, it's unfair to the working class because the premium is largely payroll-based, okay? And also, there's an increasing demand for transparency, demanding for more information and the participation. And also, there's a need for controlling the cost, especially emphasizing on the cost effectiveness. Briefly, I will talk about four components of the second generation national health insurance. The first one is the new premium systems. In the past, we have this only payroll-based premium system that is called the basic premium. Now, for the second generations, we add a supplementary premium. So now, for those people who have capital gain, who are large a bonus or who have a stock dividends, saving interest, now they have to pay 2% of every dollars they earn from these incomes. Now, this is designed in a way that only 20% of the population will be affected. So it is making more political feasible to do it. Yeah. And certainly it makes the system more fair and will sustain the system even longer. In terms of linking the revenues and the expenditure, in the past we have committees responsible for focusing the revenues, and the other committees are negotiation and decide the expense. Now we merge them together, so they have to talk to each other. Now this is sort of a kind of a balanced budget approach is another element of the second generation of national health insurance. And also we are piloting a new program called Drug Expenditures Target. And so to make the drug expense more predictable and control it in a more stable and reasonable range. And that is another thing we are doing. And certainly to make the price, the drug price adjustment more predictable, which is a good thing for the pharmaceutical company. Other things including, you know, make more transparent about the information to the public, including the quality for the individual's health care providers, the decision process, and also the financial transactions between the national health insurance and the providers, and also the disclosures of serious rule violators among the providers, which of course will make the healthcare provider even unhappy about the system. And now, on the issue of solvency, which is the bottom line issue, the average expenditure growth before the second generation, which is 2012, is something like 4.92% expenditure growth, healthcare growth in a sense, which is certainly is lower than that in these countries, but actually is higher than the revenue we have over the last 15 years. And so the system is running into insolvency in the long run. And with the second generation's, with the new supplemental premiums and also adjust the basic rates, actually so now we are able to achieve a balanced budget right now. Actually, it's more than budget, more than the balanced budget, is now we have a surplus. And so I believe this slide is one of the slides our minister is very favorable about. Actually, now the cumulative balance is about 1.8 billion US dollars as in black as compared to minus 1.3 billion US dollars in the year when he took office, that is 2010. I think he's going to take this as his legacy, and but he should be proud of it because it's really a tough job to do in a democratic society like Taiwan. And there are other things also in the second generation healthcare health insurance plans. For instance, we are creating a organization like the NICE in the UK to inject more cost-effective analysis into the systems. We are strengthening even more the information technology environments. Yes, like Dr. Truman said, we now is 99% of, you know, electronic medical charts But we are doing more to put all the information in the iCloud, and so to make it even more easy to share information. And then the problem of the long-term cares. And that is another challenge we are doing so. So I think what Minister Chu want to convey to you is really simple. As he put it here, the national health insurance in Taiwan provides enough evidence that the government's run single-payer insurance systems is workable and is able to provide a quality and efficient health care to everyone in the nations that emphasize the greatest, they will put the greatest emphasis on the less advantaged groups. And that is the take-home message from Minister Chu. I thank you very much.
I'm afraid to touch this button on another presentation. That last presenter, I was thinking on the way down here on the escalator, what do I say about Dr. Satcher again? We introduced him earlier today, and I thought, I need to make sure we know that this is a public health legend. This one gentleman was president of Meharry Medical College, director of the CDC, former Surgeon General, Assistant Secretary of Health, now runs the famous Health Leadership Institute at Morehouse School of Medicine, and has just been a tremendous asset to the world, working with WHO on the report closing the gap in a generation through social determinants. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but I won't. I'm going to ask Dr. Satcher to come on down and do his presentation.